So our scripture reading for today is from Ecclesiastes 5. In my Bible, the title is of the passage is Stand in Awe of God. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. As a dream comes when there are many cares, so the speech of a fool when there are many words. When you make a vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to vow than to make a vow and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin, and do not protest to the temple messenger, "My vow was a mistake." Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, stand in awe of God.
You know, when we're reading these passages out of Ecclesiastes, it's just always good to remember that these ideas here are coming from the what we call horizontal plane. That's what we've been calling this under the sun kind of thinking. He's seeing the bitter and barren side of life, I guess, through, I think, some pretty disillusioned eyes. But on a few rare occasions, the man, Solomon here, he breaks out of his cynical cycle that he's in. And it's at these powerful moments that he seems to kind of scrape away the veneer of religion, all the religious stuff and talk that is going on out there, to the basics of what a meaningful relationship with God is. And we're going to take a look at one of those rare occasions this morning here in his words. And these words that he uses are very much like an oasis in a desert. They're the words that refresh and restore and rebuild people. And they're words that I think really help us stay away from the pressure of life and help us step into what he says is really the awesome presence of God to worship and focus all of our attention on him. You know, a book that really became an instant, almost overnight bestseller, some of you may have read it, a few years ago came out, In Search of Excellence. And the authors here wrote this book after researching lots and lots of different companies, trying to find out and discover the reasons behind their success. And the authors make this statement in the book, that the excellent companies were, above all, brilliant on the basics. These companies worked hard to keep things simple in a complex world. So two phrases stand out here in that part of the book. First, brilliant on the basics. And secondly, simple in a complex world. I wonder why this book became a bestseller. Not a whole lot of people, I think, are talking about those kind of things. They're not breaking it down about the basics and simplicity in today's very complex world. But I think people are really hungry for basic answers, hungry for simple solutions. Not simplistic solutions, but simple, easy to comprehend, no mumbo-jumbo kind of solutions. People are hungry for answers that they can grasp onto and put to use. So, what is true in the world of work, I think, is really true in the world of worship. Worship can get covered over with complicated ways of reaching out to God. But people today, I think, are looking for basic, simple ways to connect with God. And a great example of this search for excellence is in Solomon's journal here. So let's take a look at what he has to say. Chapter 5, verse 1. Guard your steps when you go into the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools. So Solomon is writing to people who are about ready to go into the place of worship. And he's saying, you know, as you're on your way, as you go to that place, guard your steps, stay alert. Don't be dull or insensitive, even though you're really familiar with all the surroundings. Stay alert. Don't be mentally thick when you hear words that you've heard thousands and thousands of times before. Listen carefully, because some truth could be deposited into your head that's designed to change your life. In fact, in these seven verses, Solomon unfolds four instructions, and that's all I'm going to share with you today about worship. First, draw near and listen, because God is communicating. Secondly, be quiet and stay calm, because God hears the inaudible and sees the invisible. Third, make a commitment and keep it, because God believes it and doesn't forget it. And fourth, don't decide now and deny later, because God doesn't ignore our decisions. So first, draw near and listen, because God is communicating. Verse 1 again. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. So apparently, worship had been, meaningless here, trite, stale. Religion had become ho-hum. And worship can degenerate into that, into meaningless words, dead ideas. I think the worst thing is when it's irrelevant. You come to a place and it's irrelevant. I think it's a sin to bore people with the greatest story ever told. So we have to learn, I think, in times like that, to hitchhike on God's thoughts throughout this time of worship. Sometimes these thoughts can come in silence, or when someone is leading in prayer, or while we're singing. You know, a man was making his first climb into the Swiss Alps, and he was accompanied by a guide, and it was a steep and very dangerous climb, but he felt secure having the guide go ahead of him. And for hours they were climbing and climbing, and finally, out of breath, they reached the summit. And the guide wanted the rookie to have the first view of the top, and so he moved aside and let him go first. And not knowing that gale winds blow across the summit, the man stood up. But the guide quickly grabbed him and dragged him down and shouted at him over the wind, "Get on your knees. You're never safe up here except when you're on your knees." And I think that's what Solomon basically is trying to say about worship. It's not safe to draw near to a living God. You don't know what's going to happen. Secondly, be quiet and stay calm, because God hears the inaudible and he sees the invisible. Verse 2 and 3. Don't be quick with your mouth. Don't be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you're on earth. So let your words be few. As a dream comes when there are many cares, so the speech of a fool when there are many words. I think Solomon, in my words, is basically saying here, don't reduce worship to just verbal doodling. You know? Yada, 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 yada. It's easy just to doodle our way through worship and use words that we're just all so familiar with. We're busy thinking about what happened yesterday, what's going to happen tomorrow, or the decision that we've got to make on Wednesday, our kids, our jobs, our finances, whatever it is, we're supposed to just let it go and be quiet and stay calm and don't be hasty and busy and impulsive, but be still. You know, I think a great line from one of Charles Wesley's hymns, "Love Divine, All Love Excelling," says it best, where he wrote, "Lost in wonder, love and praise." Lost. I think that's a description from a guy who understood worship. Psalm 46:10, "Be still and know that I am God." In the Hebrew, that line, "Be still and know that I am God," that's just one word. That means basically to cease, to stop, to relax, to let go. Let go of the anxiety and the cares. Just let it go. Bruce Larson, in his book Believe and Belong, tells how he's helped a lot of people who are struggling. He works in New York City, And every once in a while, he'll take a person out of his office and go for a walk down to the RCA building on Fifth Avenue. And in the entrance of that building is this gigantic statue of Atlas. Here's this man with all his muscles just straining to hold the world on his shoulders. The most powerfully built man in the world, and he can barely stand up under the burden. And Larson would point out to the person now, that's one way to live. Trying to carry the world on your shoulders. Let's go across the street. And on the other side of Fifth Avenue is St. Patrick's Cathedral. And there behind the altar is a statue of Jesus as a boy, 8 or 9 years old, and with no effort at all, he's holding the entire world in one hand. I think Solomon is saying, why carry the world on your shoulders? Why not just say, I give up, Lord. Here's my world. We can get so preoccupied with how heavy this world is that we just go through empty motions of worship without really hearing anything because we're so full, you know? We don't respond because we can't take anything in anymore. Be still. Why? So that you know that I am God. Solomon states that God is in heaven and you are on the earth. Now, what picture do you have in mind when you hear that God is in heaven and you're on the earth? I would guess that most of us would say that, well, God's way out there. You know, he's in heaven someplace and we're way down here, totally disconnected. But this statement is really a statement of perspective, not distance. God is in the realm of the infinite. He's the only one who can hear the inaudible. He's the only one who can see the invisible. And that's why we're supposed to be quiet. God can penetrate into things that human ears can't hear, and he can look into things which human eyes can't see. So be still and listen. He's got some basic, simple things to say to us, so don't just quickly drag out all our problems without listening. Be still. Solomon says a third thing that you might not really connect with worship. Make a commitment and keep it because God believes it and doesn't forget it. That's my words. Verse 4 and 5. When you make a vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It's better not to vow than to make a vow and not fulfill it. Strange. Kind of overlooked words. But you know, we live in a generation of shallow commitments, if you think about it. Many would rather bail out than follow through. A promise is little more than, I think, a casual hope today. And a vow, kind of a nice, quaint idea. A commitment isn't something you can count on. The idea of really sticking to it is now the exception, a whole lot more than the rule. I want you to indulge me just for a second. I want to talk about my boss. He's not here today. His name is Art, and he's an organizational genius. He's turned down offers from major international corporations just to stay in the neighborhood and work with the folk. He moved into and has been working in this neighborhood since 1968, 43 years. Could have made more money, lived in a lot nicer neighborhood, made a name for himself, but he's done something in my view which is a whole lot greater, and that is he has stayed. All these years of ups and downs and violence and heartache, success, disappointment, but the man has stayed. So walking down the street with him this week, this man kind of came out of nowhere and said, "Hey, Art." And he began to thank him for his help with his life, his kids' life, and now his grandkids' life. So his legacy is simply that he stayed. And when everything and everyone else can't wait to get out, when government and state and city help comes and goes, he stayed. He's made a commitment. I don't know a lot of people like that. And I don't think God's asking if we make a commitment, are we going to keep it? He's asking us when we make a commitment, will we keep it? It's hard to stay in there. You know, amazing reading is a book called Pioneers. You read that and you kind of realize that back then and now really hasn't changed. It's hard to stick it out no matter what. This is what comes out of that book. It's a great quote. Pioneering is rarely an act of innocence. It's a mindful decision to accept unknown risk and commit to the effort of breaking new ground so that others may follow. And those who stick it out and survive the challenges pass along a legacy of values that endures through generations. I mean, it was bad back then. Those of you who are from Kansas, leaving home, living in sod huts, impossibly hard work, drought, flood, locusts. These people stood by commitment. They wanted to build a new life. And for many, the price was too great in the death of their children, of spouses, exhaustion, so they left. But the book goes on and says this, but the names of pioneer families today live on in the school names and street names and town names that are scattered across the plains, testimony to the magnitude of their commitment. And those who turned back are forgotten. You know, I think inherent in this whole idea of worship, of commitment to God through the best and worst of all there is to come through to the very end, is simply that we can actually leave a legacy to the next generation. Fourth and final, don't decide now and deny later, because God doesn't ignore decisions. Verse 6, don't let your mouth lead you into sin, and don't protest to the temple messenger, my vow was a mistake. Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the works of your hands? When it comes to worship, we can't let ourselves worm out of something that we once took seriously. Well, you know what, that was back when I was a teenager, an idiot. I didn't know what I was saying. It was a teenage thing. Shouldn't have really said that I was going to do those things. I didn't think of the commitment. I didn't think it through. I had no idea what I was saying back then. I was stupid. See, God doesn't put an age limit on serious decisions. He doesn't ignore our decisions. Remember that little phrase from childhood? Cross my heart and hope to die, stick a needle in my eye. Never once saw anybody stick a needle in their eye, but lots and lots of people don't stick by their decisions. It's amazing where sticking with your decisions lead you. Little known fact for you baseball fans. On opening day of 1954, in the baseball season, the Milwaukee Braves played the Cincinnati Reds. Two rookies began their major league careers with that game. The Reds end up winning 9-8 as Jim Greengrass from the Reds actually hit four doubles in his first game as a rookie. It's amazing. It's an incredible start. Now, the other rookie that was started that day for the Braves started in left field. He went 0-for-5. Not a very good start for Hank Aaron. Now, I don't know what happened to Jim Greengrass. When did he decide to quit? Why did he quit? Did he quit too soon? Could he have been a great ball player if he just would have stuck to his decision to play? And I wonder if the only thing that separated Jim Greengrass from Hank Aaron was that Aaron didn't quit. See, the battle doesn't always go to the gifted. It goes to the determined, the committed, the ones who stay in there, the ones who don't decide now and deny later. Let's end with verse 7. Solomon says, "Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, stand in awe of God." Look at those last five words. Stand in awe of God. That's worship. That's it. Think for a second about the people who have been of great help to your spiritual life and just ask yourself, why did they mean so much to me? Each one of those people put another rung in your ladder as you were climbing towards maturity. They may have been people who convinced you to take God seriously. They may have been the people who built the most into your life. Now, I don't think it wasn't that they never had fun, but when it came to God, they probably molded the message. When it comes to knowing God, nobody gets impacted by somebody who treats God like a little pygmy, you know? We become attracted to God by people who are in awe of God. Listen to something that's just going to blow your mind. In Copenhagen, you're going to find the world's most complicated clock. It took 40 years to build this thing and more than $1 million. The clock has 10 faces. It's got 15,000 parts. It's accurate to 2/5 of a second every 300 years. It computes the time of day, the days of the week, the months and years, and the movements of the planets for the next 2,500 years. Some parts of that clock will move for the first time 25 centuries from now. I mean, it's amazing. But still, there's two little things about this clock. One, it does lose 2/5 of a second every 300 years. And two, like all clocks, it has to be regulated by an even more precise clock, the universe. So we get so impressed by the stuff that we make. So impressed by the clocks that we create. But what about the billions of moving parts in the universe, from the atoms to stars, that have been rolling on from century to century to century, always accurate, always reliable, always on time? What happens when we contemplate the one who made all that? God is big. Big God. And I can't think of any word other than that but awe. I can't think of any other response to that but worship. And I can't think of any place that's safe in light of that except on our knees. We're going to pray. And we're going to respond to this message from Solomon with an act of worship called communion. So I just want you to kind of think this through and maybe not take communion in the same way, a little this and a little of that. But maybe there's something different this day for you. And I don't know what that is. But I want to pray, and I want to invite those who are serving communion to come up. And then when I'm done praying, I'm going to invite you up. Let's pray. God, help us to worship. Guard our steps. We draw near and listen because you do desire to speak to us. God, you're in heaven and we're on earth, so we let our words be few. We quiet ourselves and we stay calm because you hear the inaudible in our lives and you see the invisible. When you make a vow to God, don't delay in fulfilling it. We make our commitment to you, and we'll keep it because you believe it. Don't protest that my vow was a mistake. We don't decide now and deny later because you don't ignore the decisions we make. So we now come before you, and we remember. And we contemplate, and we're in awe of you. that while they were eating, Jesus actually took bread and gave thanks and broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat. This is my body." And then he took the cup and he gave thanks and he offered it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I'll not drink of the fruit of the vine from now on until the day when I drink it anew with you in my Father's kingdom." And then when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. So as you're ready, please come forward and partake in this time of worship.